Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Today is the day before Thanksgiving. Good morning. I'm Paul Perreault. This is Faith Radio Mornings on Faith Radio. And, yeah, maybe you're getting ready. You're getting the turkey ready, the stuffing. Maybe you're already planning salad. Well, make sure it doesn't have romaine lettuce in it. There right now is a big recall of romaine lettuce due to E. coli poisonings. There have been 10 people in California, another 2 out east. Basically, and the CDC doesn't know where the E. coli is coming from, so they just said, don't eat romaine. Don't eat romaine. So, anyway. Bill English is already with us in the studio getting ready for Thanksgiving. Your family, you were talking just a while ago. I'm not trying to put you on the spot here.
Oh, of course you're not, while my wife is listening. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
But you're looking forward to Thanksgiving, aren't you?
Immensely, yes. 40-some people coming to our house that holds about, I don't know, 20 at the most.
Okay.
So, but a lot of grandnieces and nephews, so it'll be a fun time.
That's good. That's good. You have your plan, because you, like me, you're an introvert by nature.
I am, yes.
That's why we work in radio, because we're in a little room, there's padding on the wall, usually maybe one or two people. It's doable.
It is. Yes.
It's doable.
It is.
So, but
it is.
You're an introvert. You have your game plan, though, how to tackle this.
So I plan to spend most of the day in the kitchen doing dishes, because we don't have enough dishes for everybody to use, multiple times. So we're going to have to cycle through all of our dishes at least twice. So I'm just going to stay in the kitchen and do dishes.
One word for you.
Yes.
Chinettes.
Hadn't thought about that. I might have to go to Target today.
And that way you don't – well, wait a minute. This was your plan. You were going to sit in as an introvert, do the dishes. This might be a bad idea. Ignore what I said.
Well, actually, the other thing I would enjoy doing is getting out all the Thomas the Tank Engine stuff that we still have, the tracks and the trains from when my kids were little.
Uh-huh.
They're now in their 20s. And building a train track for all the little kids to play. That I would enjoy doing, too.
Oh, okay. There are coping mechanisms.
There are coping mechanisms for being with people.
And when all else fails, there's football.
Oh, there is football, but...
3 games.
Is there 3 games?
3 games.
I know the Lions are playing, because they always play on Thanksgiving. Who else is playing?
The Lions are playing.
Yeah.
So are the Cowboys. That's game 2.
Oh, yeah, the Cowboys always play,
and then
play
the Saints in the evening.
Oh, the Saints. The hated Saints.
Yeah.
The evil, despised Saints.
Yeah.
My daughter has no use for the Saints. She's a huge Vikings fan, and the Saints are not saintly in her mind. I'll put it that way.
Well, when we get back, last week you had the Best Practices Conference, your organization, the Platinum Group, and we're going to be talking about some of those top 10 best practices. Not all of them, but we're going to start talking about them shortly here on Faith Radio. Thanks for listening to Faith Radio Mornings. The power of business, because that's also Bill English's walk-up song. Good morning again, Bill.
Good morning, Mr. Paul. Yeah,
thanks for joining us on Faith Radio Mornings.
You're
welcome. You weren't here last week. I kind of bummed, but you were busy.
I was. We had the Best Practices Conference last week, the third one we've done, and it was very successful. We had 83 or 4 people there with about 32, I think, CEOs and another 16 or 17 business decision makers here in the Twin Cities. Very niche conference, mm-hmm. Not a large conference, but if you own a business, 5 million and up, it was the place to be.
It was the place to be. And as the name suggests, you were talking best practices in business, and you gave me a list of 10 here.
Yes.
You gave me a list of 10, so let's start going through those, and we'll hopefully not get them all today. We'd like to Because I want you to dig into these really well. The first one you talk about is hire character, train skill.
Yeah, that's the first best practice. So these are platinums. That's the group that I consult through. These are platinums, top 10 best practices for business owners. The first one is hire character, train skill. Because the opposite will kill your business. If you hire skill and you plan to train the character because the person's kind of odd or they're just toxic in a personality, they may be crazy good at what they do in their job, and they may be able to land all kinds of wonderful new accounts or, you know, develop great processes or whatever. But if their personality or their character is toxic for your organization, they're going to ruin your business. And so what we always suggest is that you look at people who have good character and who can fit your culture, and then if you need to, train their skill. But always hire character first.
But this is hard, too, because when you when you're looking for candidates for a job and you look at their resume, what does it usually talk about?
Their skills.
Their skills.
Right. And that's where good interviewing is important. It's not just sitting down and asking them, you know, now how would you handle this situation and what have you done in that situation? You know, you go to lunch with them. You put them in different situations. You maybe you're purposefully late to one of the meetings just to see how they handle somebody who didn't do what they were supposed to do. You know, you create situations where you get to know them. And the more key they are to your organization, the more time you need to spend with them before you hire them.
I think about a guy that was hired at one of the radio stations I worked at. And before he was hired, the interim manager took us out to dinner, or out to lunch, and it was there as I was watching him, getting to know his heart, just conversation, watching how he interacted with the waitress.
Yep.
That spoke volumes to me.
Yeah.
And so when the interim manager asked me afterwards, what do you think about this guy? I said, he's the man.
He's the guy.
He's the guy you want for this position.
Yeah.
It was so obvious.
Yeah. Figuring out who a person is more important than figuring out what they can do. So if you're the owner of a business and you've built a great business with a great culture, you're already in tune with this. If you're getting ready to start a business or maybe you're getting ready to hire your first round of employees, you really want to make sure you get people with great character.
There you go. The second of the top 10 practices you have is engage a team of trusted advisors to regularly speak truth into your life.
I cannot tell you how many small business owners I've met who despise consultants. They despise accountants, lawyers, bankers. In fact, they view their banker as somebody to be maneuvered. I give them just enough information so I can get my line of credit, but otherwise I never talk to my banker. And consultants do nothing but drain your money and never give you any value at all. These are the kind of business owners that usually get stuck. They don't know that they're stuck, or if they do know that they're stuck, they have enough hubris to think that they can get out of it on their own. Much better for a small business owner to come along and say, I'm going to surround myself with people who are smarter in me than me in areas that I'm not good at, legal, accounting, banking, financial planning, human resources, and the list goes on. And I'm going to develop a list of trusted advisors who I talk to on a regular basis. Yeah, you'll pay for them, but in the long run, they will save you a ton of money. I will tell you that a good lawyer will save you a ton of money. A great accountant will save you a ton of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of times, because you bring up consultants, and, you know, we work in radio, we have a lot of consultants, or a lot of people who are out there, and it's some consultants, I do have to admit, seem to have a package. Do this, do this, do this, without really getting to know you. Now, you're
right.
Talking something different.
I am. I'm talking about getting to know trusted advisors who get to know you personally and can speak truth into those parts of your business that you're not good at, but they do it in such a way that it's consistent with your values, your culture, and they know where you want to go with the business, and so it's consistent with your strategy. And just a note on bankers, for business owners out there, you really want to develop a great relationship with your banker. Your banker should be one of the first people who learns about the problems in your business, not the last. They are the ones who supply you with the cash that you need when you need it a lot of times. Now, sometimes it's private equity and other money, but a lot of times it's a banker. They don't like surprises. they really don't like surprises. So the more transparent you can be with your banker, chances are the more they will work with you.
So you're getting to that issue of transparency.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing in the proper setting.
Honesty and transparency with your trusted advisors. I'm all over it.
All right. We're talking with Bill English from Bible in Business, also talking about the Platinum Group. You're part of that and your recent Top 10 Best Practices Conference. And we're going to continue with this in just a few moments here on Faith Radio Mornings. Seventeen past the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, sitting in for Peter Kapsner, and it's Wednesday, so we have our usual visit with Bill English from Bible in Business. Real quickly, Bill, Bible in Business, for those who have not been to the website, tell us about it.
It's Bill's Thinking Out Loud. And it's also,
and that can be a pretty scary thing sometimes, because
yes,
we're talking
yes,
off mic here, and you keep coming up with these abbreviations for things I'm saying, you know?
You know, well, it's what I do. It's how my mind works. But Bible in Business is where I think out loud. I've been blogging there since August of 2011. And there's an embryonic book out there. The core of my call, God's call on my life, is to write a theology for business owners on what the Bible has to say about stewarding a business properly before the Lord. And so there's an embryonic book out there, a lot of posts, about 400 posts out there. I think there's about 60 or 70 of these radio interviews out there. They all link back to Faith Radio. And I got interviews with Austin Hill, with Bill Meyer, with you, with Bill Arnold,
yep,
and Peter Kapsner. What I don't have is an interview with Peter Kapsner while he's in Florida over Thanksgiving. I don't have that yet, but I hope to get that soon.
Yeah, he's probably just listening and chuckling right now, poolside, while he's listening on the Faith Radio app.
I doubt it. He's
he's listening.
You think so?
I think he just texted me, too.
Did he really?
No, anyway. Anyway, getting back to what we were talking about, you last week, you missed out on your usual segment because of the Best Practices Conference, and we're dealing with some of those Top 10 best practices.
Yep.
Let's get to number 3, which has to deal with conflict and problems. And the word you have is embrace, engage, and deal with the negative.
You have the problems you tolerate. You have the conflicts you tolerate. If you want continuous conflicts in your company, then make sure that all you do is avoid conflict. So we talk a lot about running to the bullets, running to the fire, running to the negative, running to the conflict, getting it resolved as fast as possible. Because when you have unresolved conflict, you leave opportunity, growth, and profits on the table. Nobody likes conflict. I don't like it. You don't like it. I don't even think Neil Stavem likes it, you know?
Well, he's Scandinavian.
Well, that's true. Okay, but still, I don't think anybody here likes conflict.
No.
But as an owner, as a leader, that's one of the things that you have to get past. You have to get past yourself and get into the conflict as soon as you can.
Okay, but that, again, takes this vulnerability and humility thing.
It does, but it also takes some tact, and you have to hold your emotions in check, and you have to kind of wade through. One of the operating principles there is the truth is never the problem. The other operating principle is seek first to understand the other person before you try to be understood. And when you do those two things in conflict resolution, a lot of times you can get it resolved.
That kind of brings to mind, it's just basic stuff that you hear from Ken Sandy, Peacemakers Ministries, learning how to deal with conflict.
But it's so very hard to do, and a lot of people avoid it. And that what I'm saying is if you're a business owner, you're avoiding conflict, you are stifling your business, and your business will never grow, and you personally will never become the owner and the leader that you think you could become until you learn to deal with conflict.
And that's the key right there. I think you just nailed it, because unless you're willing to engage, you're hindering yourself.
And your business,
and your employees,
and all the rest of it.
Okay. So. Number 4, because we only have a few minutes left here. Number 4, know your cash break-even, get under it, and stay there.
Cash management.
Or you said off mic, cash manglement.
Yeah, I always say manglement for management.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, it could be mangling anything, right? But cash manglement, cash management. Look, know your cash break-even, get under it, and stay there.
Now explain all those terms you just used.
Yeah, so cash, what is the cash break-even? The cash break-even is not found on your income statement. So when you do a P&L report out of QuickBooks or Peachtree or whatever accounting system something you're using, even if you do it on a cash basis, you're not going to get your cash break even out of that. You got to go Excel and figure this out. And so what you want to look at is how much dollars are actually going out the door on a per time period basis, usually monthly is how people measure this. How much dollars are going out the door? How many dollars are coming in? When do they meet each other? When do they equal zero? That's your cash break even. What you want to do is have less dollars going out than dollars coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on an accrual basis, you can show profitability on your income statement and still go out of business. You can still go bankrupt because accrual is matching expenses to revenues. Okay, it doesn't really deal as much with cash. But on a cash basis, if you're always bringing more cash in than you're putting out, it's harder to go out of business. It's harder mm-hmm. to go bankrupt. It can still be done, but it's harder to do that. And so a platinum, we talk about knowing your cash break even, get under it, stay there, always be building cash in your business.
This is kind of that mechanical stuff that a lot of people don't like to deal with.
Every turnaround I've ever been associated with, they didn't know their cash break even, and they were spending more cash than what was coming in, and they didn't know it.
And you're dealing with a company like that right now.
Yeah, we're starting the turn now, finally, after a year. But, if you want help dealing with this, just give me a call. I can help you figure out your cash break even.
Okay. One last one, as we only have a few minutes left here, and that is talking about the issue of governance.
Governance.
Choosing your partners carefully.
So many small businesses do not pay attention to governance, and a lot of them have partners, and they are partnerships of convenience rather than partnerships of strategy. Partnerships of convenience are people who come together to work in a business, and it's usually their tasks or their talents usually offset each other or complement each other, and so that's why they form a partnership. But they rarely take a look at whether the individuals who are entering into that partnership agreement can actually engage in the governance aspect of the business. Can they run a staff? Can they be part of a board? Are they willing to take time to work on the business rather than in the business? That kind of thing. And so you want your partners, even though they might be crazy smart and highly talented, a lot of times really smart, talented people make lousy business partners. And the reason for that is because they're so good in their area of expertise that they assume that they're just as good in all of these other areas mm-hmm. of the business that they really know nothing about. But their hubris spills over into those other areas of business, and they're very difficult to work with from a governance perspective. So when you're putting your business together, or if you have a partner now and what I've just described sounds very familiar to you, then you probably have a partnership of convenience rather than strategy. What you need to do is to make sure that you are managing your governance correctly and getting the right people at the governance layer.
When you're talking about that, I'm thinking back to point number one, which was hire character, train skill. And although that's talking about the employee, I mean, it's bookended. You've got that at the governance level. You have that at the employee level to a degree.
You do. You need to have the right character at the ownership level. And the character traits at the ownership level are, they overlap a lot with what you need with employees, but they are a little bit different. And the characteristics that you need at the ownership level really needs to be able to focus on delayed gratification. I'm going to serve my staff before I serve myself kind of thing. And they really need to do the number three, conflict and problems. They really need to know how to embrace, engage, and deal with the negative in a way that propels people forward and the business forward. A lot of talented people don't know how to do that.
Okay. We're talking with Bill English, actually wrapping up our time. Bill, apart from the crowd at your house.
The crowd at my house.
That's coming up. I mean, okay, what are you looking forward to on the table tomorrow?
It's not so much the food. I'm looking forward to having some time alone with the Lord, either Thursday morning or Friday morning, and just spending time being refreshed by God. I'll get up at 4:30 and have a couple hours by myself, and really looking forward to that.
Wow. I like that.
I do too.
All right. Well, Bill, thanks for joining us again on Faith Radio Mornings. And
you bet.
Hopefully next week we can tackle the next five.
Yeah, we'll do
list.
The other five next week.
Sounds good.
All right.
This is Faith Radio Mornings. 31 past the hour, Faith Radio Mornings. You know, there are a handful of different ways of cooking your Thanksgiving turkey. Microwaving, probably not one you typically think of. A new viral prank, though, has left many people asking their parents how to cook a turkey in the microwave. And the responses are taking social media by storm. It's called the Turkey Challenge. Another one of those hashtag challenges. So hashtag turkey challenge, where users post screenshots of a conversation with their parents. While most parents laugh at the seemingly foolish question, the Department of Agriculture's Food and Food Safety and Inspection Service says, well, it is possible to cook a turkey in the microwave, but incredibly difficult. I think the size alone would be kind of the hindrance. But anyway, this is Faith Radio Morning. Stay with us. Twenty-four before the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault. Yesterday I had an opportunity to talk with David Bowden about rewiring our hearts in relationship to sin. Now, using pornography as an example, when seeking not to change just our behavior, but also our hearts toward it.
You try the suppression, you tried the guardrails, and we've all been, I've been there too. And then there's this change in belief, that you start to believe something different about these women that you're looking at, and you're saying that, oh, this woman is made in the image of God, and there's a truth that enters into your life that alters your actions. And so while that very real truth of that woman is made in the image of God, that woman is someone's daughter, this woman is probably in some kind of sex trafficking situation, like all these things can help us kind of change our emotions toward pornography, but ultimately there are even greater truths and beliefs and faith that we can have when we go all the way to the thing that's most true about the universe, which is Jesus Christ and his gospel. And it does the exact same thing to an even greater degree that you're talking about, is it changes how we view everything, and it gives us new emotions. And it says, like, I don't even want porn anymore. It's disgusting to me because now I've seen something better.
And that's true about dealing with other sins as well. If you'd like to hear the full interview, you can go to our website, myfaithradio.com, and under the Faith Radio Morning Show page, you can check out the podcast with David Bowden from yesterday's show. Well, coming up in just a few moments, spiritual first responders. I saw a news article about that, which just led to some wonderful discoveries that I want to bring a couple of people in on. So stay with us. That is Faith Radio Mornings here on Faith Radio.
Ever wonder if God is truly working in your kids? Sometimes, does it feel like he's overlooked your family? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Let me offer a fresh perspective. Maybe God is answering your prayers right now. Yeah, it doesn't feel like it, but the teen that's spiraling out of control in your home could be the tool God uses to grow your faith. Perhaps the conflict you're facing right now is the intentional lesson God designed specifically for you and your kids. So stop and think. Look back to the year behind us and the year we're about to start. Determine right now to watch for the answers to your prayers coming your way. Don't lose heart. God is working. God's answering prayers right in the midst of your struggle.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
Twenty-one before the hour. This is Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, and I'm usually the guy in this newsroom giving Peter Kapsner all the news. He keeps talking about stacks and stacks of papers, as he likes to say, and that's because I spend a good chunk of time scouring the news for topics to talk about, and just we love to find stories about God working wonderful things. And strangely enough, I came across an article a couple of weeks ago at the Associated Press's website about spiritual first responders. And among the people mentioned was a pastor by the name of Jamie Casey, who is a volunteer chaplain for a police department. And I think it's out east. I'll let them talk about it. I got them on the line. Actually, I started talking about that, and I reached out to the church, met the chief pastor, the head pastor, who is Brian Duby. Brian, thank you for joining us this morning.
It's great to be with you.
And Jamie Casey, also thank you for joining us this morning. I'm looking forward to hearing your stories.
Happy to be here with you, Paul.
All right. Well, anyway, let's start off because, as I mentioned, after reading the article, I searched out the website for South Coast Community Church Fairhaven in Massachusetts, right?
Yeah.
All right. And that just led to just wonderful stories. Had a chance briefly to talk with Pastor Brian. So let's start there because there's a lot of backstory to Jamie, you being a spiritual first responder as it was. So let's go back in time. Brian, talk about your two friendships and where you guys started out at.
Sure. Yeah. So, our friendship goes back almost 30 years. And, Jamie was like the cool kid that I, would see, pull into this like local park when we were kids, and he would pull in and he would be driving his dad's really cool car. And, it was like, this is a cool guy I want to hang out with, and eventually, became friends with him. And that friendship really led to, his brother's married to my sister, his daughter's godfather. And, we just have such a history of a friendship of going through, the good times and the bad, and, just all that entails. It's just been, one of my closest friendships, more like a brother than anything. That friendship led us both ultimately to, to addiction, not because of the friendship, but because of, our past where we were and we ended up in addiction and we ended up out of addiction. Sort of both, following that same path, freedom in Christ. So that, that was kind of how it came to pass.
So, okay, let's talk about how you guys came out of addiction. Now, Brian, you were the first to tackle the issue, weren't you?
Yeah, Jamie likes to say that when we were kids, he led me into the darkness and then I led him into the light. I had had a... I'd had sort of an experience with my wife and my family where they said, we love you, but you really need to get help. I had tried a few detoxes, kind of short-term solutions, medication, things like that. And it just didn't work for me. And so there's a long-term program called Teen Challenge that's, really throughout the world, mm-hmm. throughout the United States, and there's Teen Challenge New England in our region here. And so I entered the program thinking I was going to do 30 days. And 12 years later, I'm still there as a campus pastor as well. And so, after going through and graduating the program, I was invited to be part of an intervention for Jamie. Things had gotten bad for him as well. And he, he saw the change in me and came into Teen Challenge. And then the story goes about a year after that, the two of us sat down at another friend's house and did an intervention with that individual. And now I'm the lead pastor, Jamie's the associate, and that other individual is an elder in the church. So you have, these three guys who 30 years later were, running around doing all this stuff and now all serving Jesus together. So it is a remarkable story of the power of the gospel.
Well, Jamie, let's ask your side of the story, too, here. Because, what happened when Brian approached you and kind of did the intervention?
I was in a very broken place. The events and the years that led up to that moment obviously had brought me there to needing an intervention, So I had my two best friends, my mother and my brother, sitting in a room, kind of confronting me. And just like Brian, I had been through a bunch of different treatment programs and medications and therapists and things like that. And, nothing worked. It was really all just trying to put a Band-Aid on this gaping wound. And when I had saw, I remember thinking when Brian went away, it was a, 15-month program, Teen Challenge, and he was still there. I remember being with a friend and going, yeah, he's crazy now. He's been in this program for over a year. I said, we've lost him, and it was kind of a joke. But the reality was is that, we were proud of him as well, and his dad had actually passed away while he was in that program, and mm-hmm. I had a glimpse of that. He came home for that because I was at the house when that all happened. And, I just remember seeing such a different person. It was you see people who are reformed, who are clean and sober and things like that. And that's great, but what I saw in Brian was much more than that. I saw freedom and I saw a new life. He just wasn't even the same guy. He had this peace that I really wanted. There seemed to be a contentment, a joy, a love for people that, was always there, but sort of never in its pure form, So just all of it, the entire package, it was undeniable, and there was no way you could fake it after being who we were for so long.
Mm-hmm. Here at Faith Radio, we like to talk about connecting faith to life because God changes things. God can renew things and change. And, Jamie, as you went through the process, I mean, what was it you really experienced? You went through Teen Challenge too, right?
That's correct. Yeah. Again, I was only going in for 30 days because, you know, it'd be crazy to stay any longer than that. You know, that we have lives and kids and all these things, you know. My story was a little different than Brian's. I ended up losing all those things. I had kind of taken my addiction had taken me a little further. And so I lost a marriage and my kids were kind of a little at that time not wanting to really be around me, and was understandably so. So I kind of went in there with like, well, I've got to do something, because prior to their intervention, there was a moment of I really just wanted to take my own life. I thought that this was the end. I'd lost my wife. I'd lost my kids. I'd lost my home, you know, everything, my jobs. I was just sort of – I was living from friend's house to friend's house, sleeping in my car some nights. And then so I went in there sort of like, hey, if I can do this for the last 20 years or so, then there's no reason why I can't, you know, tough out 30 days here and see what this is all about. And when I went in there, one of the things I did promise myself and God was that I was just going to surrender to Him in this process. And I was still a skeptic at this point. Like, I had faith, but I really wasn't a committed follower of Jesus Christ. So when I went in there, I kind of just said, okay, if, you know, I kind of threw up my little fleece and said, if you're a real God, then show me. And as if I had a right to do that, but, but you know, He's God, and it says, ask, yeah, seek, or knock. And I'll tell you, I was broken and desperate, and that He was all I had left, and He showed up.
Careful what you challenge God. That's what I've learned a long time ago. Anyway,
sure.
We're talking with Pastor Brian Doobie and Pastor Jamie Casey. They are pastors at South Coast Community Church in Fairhaven, Massachusetts. We're going to come back in a couple of minutes, and I want to get into the story about being spiritual first responders and what you're seeing right now in the opioid crisis. So stay with us. This is Faith Radio Mornings. Before the hour, Faith Radio Mornings. I'm Paul Perreault, sitting in for Peter Kapsner. On the line, I have pastors Brian Doobie and Jamie Casey. They're pastors out at South Coast Community Church in Fairhaven, talking about, you know, well, really life change so far. And how has that, I got to ask you too, because as you mentioned, you're both recovering from drug dependency. You have a person who's an elder on the board that you guys help bring around, and now he's an elder in your church. How has that transformed that church as you look at serving your community?
Yeah, I mean, I think what people most identify with, and I think that, you know, the key to South Coast is the authenticity and the, you know, the transparency. You know, all of us are broken. Sin breaks us, and we all need to come to God to find healing. And I think too oftentimes people's experience with church is that the church, you know, everybody has it all together. And so we're a church where, you know, we say we're just a bunch of broken people trying to love, you know, love each other back to life with the love of Jesus. And but that that transparency and authenticity with Jamie and I, when we preach from, hey, this was a mistake I made, this is what God showed me, and this is what He can do in your life. And I think that's refreshing, and it's incredibly uncommon. And so I think what we continue to get is, boy, you know, there's something different about this church, and it's because I believe that our addiction brought us to a place of such brokenness that we can't be anything, you know, but humble before God. I mean, we shouldn't be alive. So the fact that not only are we alive, but we're blessed to serve the Lord and others is so far beyond. It's like Ephesians 3:20, right? I mean, it's so far beyond what we could have asked or imagined that we can't stand but, you know, just be in His grace and mercy.
You think about the Apostle Paul and the way he wrote in a lot of his letters. He was very authentic about his past life as a persecutor,
right.
And it was what it was, sin.
Right.
And yet he celebrated the grace given him.
Right, right. And so, I think, you know, especially in New England, we're very compartmentalized. So people have their church life and their family life and their work life. And I think, you know, the gospel is supposed to be, you know, Christ is the center of all those things. And I think even, you know, throughout, you know, it's a human thing, but particularly in New England where, you know, we're sort of, you know, isolated and independent. And so I think that it's refreshing to have, you know, this real strong sense of community, like, hey, we're doing life together, and we all have our struggles, but with Christ at the center, we're all going to overcome.
That's cool. Hey, Jamie, now, you've been a chaplain, a volunteer chaplain with the New Bedford Police Department, and doing these ride-alongs. And there was a video that AP had of you talking with one of those who's been affected by the, well, actually several people affected by the opioid crisis. Tell me, what is that like out there right now?
It's rough. I mean, as you know, there's a national crisis right now. I mean, this opioid crisis has taken so many lives, and even the lives it hasn't taken, you know, physically in death, it's overcome a lot of people in the bondage of addiction. It's a very powerful drug, very powerful class of drugs, and with heroin sort of being less prevalent now, and actually being a fentanyl that seems to be the one that everyone is seeking, because there's no growing season, it's cheaper to make, it comes in abundance. So now we're seeing a lot more of that, which is a much more powerful form of opioid than heroin is. So, you know, it's just really just ravaging communities. And, you know, the opportunity, this program, COPE, C-O-A-P, it's Community Outreach and Prevention is what it stands for. It was started through a local foundation and the Interchurch Council. Reverend David Leamer is our lead chaplain, and he brought me on a little over a couple of years ago, knowing my story, knowing my background, and having spoken at a couple of their events. And, you know, it wasn't actually too long after that, I'd say maybe about a year later, that I kind of invited Brian to be part of this as well. So Pastor Brian does do this with me now too. And, you know, we get out there, we're able to sort of see people in their worst, at their worst, in some of the toughest environments possible. These are people who have recently survived a drug overdose. So we're trying to get them at their brokenness, at that level where we can sort of talk to them in their vulnerability. And, you know, we really are seeing some progress. There is some connection happening there. I'm a director of a program in New Bedford as well that mainly focuses on drug and alcohol and treatment and recovery stuff. And so there's this ability to sort of connect with them on the streets or in their homes or wherever they're at after one of these near-death experiences, and really kind of hit them with the hope of Christ. The beauty of this program is that we're working with the local police department in New Bedford, Massachusetts, and also another organization that is not faith-based that sends recovery coaches and counselors out with us. So we've got the three of us in one cruiser riding around the city together, going to into these really difficult situations. Sometimes we show up, unfortunately, and it's happened to me a few times now, where that person didn't survive the overdose, mm-hmm. where that wasn't reported because, you know, there isn't really a continuum of care between hospitals and law enforcement in place. There is now. We finally got this MOU in place. Right. But at one point, so you'd show up and, you know, the police officer knocks on the door typically. This person comes to the door, and we're looking for this person of interest, and I can remember those occasions where they said, no, I'm sorry, he or she did not make it. And now they step back immediately, oh, pastor, that's your job. You know, so yeah. There's a lot of ministry happening outside of just the people that we're ministering to that have overdosed, but also to their families, also to their spouses, and also to the police officers and the counselors that are in the car with us. We're doing spiritual checkups with them as well.
Mm-hmm. We've got about a minute left here. Pastors, how has the community there embraced what you're doing? I mean, it sounds like you're doing great work. I mean, how have other churches, have they been supportive of what you're doing?
Yeah, I think it's starting to catch on. I think you're starting to hear, you know, as the church sometimes can neglect, you know, the physiological component of addiction and treat it as just a spiritual condition. It really needs a holistic approach. We're relational and physical and, you know, emotional and spiritual beings, and any solution needs to really speak to that, all those facets of who we are. And so I think what you're seeing is, because the crisis is so bad, the faith community's been invited, and so they're seeing the difference that spiritual component makes as well, and how essential that is too.
All right. Pastors Brian Duby and Jamie Casey from South Coast Community Church in Fairhaven, Massachusetts, thank you again for joining us this morning and just sharing your amazing story.
Thank you for having us. It's been a joy.
This is Faith Radio Mornings. Well, thank you again for tuning in to Faith Radio Mornings on this day before Thanksgiving, and a quick shout out to all those who are helping out others during the Thanksgiving season, providing meals and support. For example, down in Madison, the Madison School and Community Recreation Organization handing out meals to about 80 low-income families did that yesterday at the Allied Learning Center in Madison. And those meal baskets containing all the traditional fixings. It's great to see people coming together, supporting others. It's just a great way, of, especially as the church, to share the love of Christ. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving, and hope you join us tomorrow on Faith Radio Mornings here on Faith Radio. Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.